the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. If you like what you hear, this is important, hit that subscribe button in your iTunes. Subscribe to it so you get them all. Leave a rating. Tell a friend. Share this bad boy. Also, don't forget to check out Monday's In the Crease podcast with Dan Ayburn and Kyle Devitt, along with Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. Dixie, let's get it. All right, Dix, spring has sprung. March Madness is upon us and another insane week of college lacrosse with a lot of fantastic finishes on TV, no less. And it was a bad weekend for home teams in overtime. Hopkins, Maryland, Virginia, all home teams go down in big games on TV in overtime. Let's talk a little hoops first. How was your weekend? I watched a lot of hoops, had a lot of fun with my buddies. We did some group wagering on some of the NCAA tournament games. My bracket is busted. Duke Blue Devils lost. Tough end to a really hard season for those guys. A lot of ups and downs. They did win the ACC championship, which was pretty cool, but just met a tougher, mentally tougher team on Sunday in South Carolina. So
yeah, Grayson Allen and the Blue Devils just couldn't kick the Gamecocks aside, could they?
Nice, good try.
Just couldn't get their
foot in the right place. I think what you want to say is that the Gamecocks tripped up the Blue Devils.
You could do that, yeah. That's good.
But it
tripped
was,
up Grayson Allen.
He had 20 points. He was the high scorer
in
the game. So
he's a good player.
It was, in a way, I'm almost relieved. It was frustrating and difficult watching all those games for me as a fan. But we'll see. The team's going to be very different next year. A couple of things to follow up on. We talked about how good the ACC was getting 9 teams in NCAA tournament. There's only one left standing in the Sweet 16. Maybe the ACC wasn't so good this year.
It happens. ACC is a premier conference in pretty much all athletics. Clemson won the national championship in football. And
it's a football conference now.
Well, basketball's always been strong, but you know other conferences are going to step up, and it is what it is, man. I mean, you know, it is what it is.
We'll get to it when we talk about our poll.
Right.
Our Maverick media poll. But one particular conference that's really showing up big in our Maverick media poll.
Well, before you get to that, though, like the terrain has changed so much. Louisville, who I picked to go to the Final Four, they're an ACC school now. Notre Dame, ACC. Syracuse, ACC. I mean, back in the day, I mean, Louisville was what? American?
Conference USA.
Conference USA.
Then Big East.
You know, Syracuse has always been Big East. I mean, back in the 80s, the St. John, Syracuse, Georgetown, Villanova battles. Notre Dame, I mean, they weren't even Big East back then. I mean, they were independent and everything, maybe?
Yeah, they had to be in some type of basketball conference.
I mean, I remember they had David Rivers back in the day.
Yeah, he was great. Kelly Trepiuka.
Kelly Trepiuka. I got to know Kelly. Yeah, when Jake went to Duke. Kelly's a good dude. Interviewed him at during the Under Armour All-America game a few years ago.
Jake was a great midfielder.
Really good player. Yeah, really good player. Kelly Trepiuka. Who else? Adrian Dantley. Yeah. Adrian Dantley went to Notre Dame, played
hoops. Did Jake Trepiuka have a MLL career?
I think he did play in the MLL. He still may be playing. I'm not really sure, but I do know he did play in MLL. Yeah.
And we were talking about Syracuse basketball. Jim Boeheim this weekend pulled a Jay Leno.
How about
that? We talked about the coach in waiting and that whole situation.
Yeah.
Mike Hopkins took the Washington head coaching job. He was the longtime assistant who was sort of the coach in waiting, and Jim Boeheim signed on for like 5 more years. So I think he's scheduled coach until he's 77 years old.
Does that make Mike Hopkins Conan O'Brien?
Yes.
And Washington is TBS?
Yeah.
You know?
Like we were saying, the coach in waiting situation
not a good
never
idea.
Works
no,
out. It,
no.
it rarely ever works out, and that's another example of it. And then one more thing I need to address is these wagers that you called me out on being a nerd for, which I still don't understand exactly what you mean on that. But we were so bad, Dix. At one point, there was a lot of discussion of pulling a Costanza.
Mm-hmm.
Just whatever, just decide who we're going to pick on all the games, spreads, over-unders, whatever. Basically, what we do is I have 7 buddies or 6 buddies. All 7 of us will pick one game in a 7-team parlay. So sort of the odds stack up against each other, and they sort of exponentially get higher and higher, which makes it more difficult to win. But we actually hit one of these a few years ago, which was really exciting. So we think we're always going to hit them. We weren't even winning like back-to-back games. The best we did on any seven-game parlay was 4, and we did about 8 of them, I think, this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going to pull a Costanza, put in our picks, and then just decide on the opposite every time.
Why not?
Yeah, because it was that bad.
Yeah,
I was terrible. I awful. I didn't help our cause at all.
It's like pulling a chocolate eclair out of the garbage.
Yeah, and you watch so much. I watch so much college basketball all year, mm-hmm. and then I don't know what I'm talking about. Obviously, I think I might know more about lacrosse. So let's talk about lacrosse a little bit. Again, it was a bad week for teams in overtime. Hopkins and Maryland and Virginia go down. Villanova with a huge lacrosse win.
Yeah,
you know, on the day got when their basketball
team got tripped up in hoops. Yeah,
number one overall seed loses, but their basketball team, the lacrosse team has an awesome win against the Terps on the road. And let's start with that game. Villanova 13, Maryland 12. I think it was Jake Vaccaro had an overtime goal to score the game winner there. And the Terps, what's going on with the Terps? It's 2 in a row that they've lost now.
They lose to Notre Dame a couple weeks ago. Then they have their game against Albany canceled. So that right there, and every college lacrosse program, every college lacrosse team is pretty regimented. I've gotten to know the Maryland program under John Tillman's leadership the last couple of years quite well, and they are very regimented too in what they do and how organized they are. And you know, Coach Tillman and his staff do a great job with that. So I think you know that cancellation game kind of threw them off a little bit, but you're at home against a Villanova team coming in 2-4, and this, to me, is the most improbable, unpredictable upset in a season that has seen a ton of upsets. You know, Richmond over North Carolina more recently, but I think as we get to know the Tar Heels better, we're seeing that that's a very good defensive team, but offensively, they're missing a few pieces. And you know, the graduation of Pontrello and the graduation of Patrick Kelly, and, you know, I think they're missing some leadership on the offensive end, offensive side of the ball. But this was a game where Villanova, I think, just – and we're going to talk about this later as well with the Ohio State victory over Denver. They just came out with a ton of energy. And I think they just had kind of a devil-may-care attitude and just nothing to lose. And they were just all over Maryland. And I was watching this game, and I'm thinking, all right, Maryland's going to turn it on at any moment and get the job done. And it just never really came. I mean, you mentioned Ficarro's effort. You know, he was terrific.
Just to clarify that, it was Danny Siebel who took a Jake Vaccaro pass,
right,
who scored the game winner. I was incorrect on that. I knew Vaccaro was involved.
Yeah, but he still had the assist and ended the game with what, 3 goals and 2 assists.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a 5-point day. And this game, as it progressed, Vaccaro was the leader for Villanova offensively. Jake Vaccaro, that is, his younger brother Joey chipped in an assist, but it almost became the Vaccaro-Rambo showdown because Matt Rambo, I know we talked about Tuorton moments and some people are like, oh, can you have a Tuorton moment in March? And, you know, Kark was talking about Tuorton moment during the Notre Dame-Virginia broadcast. So, yes, you can have a Tuorton moment in the month of March. But I thought Rambo put the team on his back. I thought and all the talent that Maryland has, and Tim Rotan's played extremely well too. Rotan's ended that game with 3 goals.
Heacock was silent. No goals, no assists.
Well, Danny Sweeney, you know, was taking him a little bit, and Villanova had a nice game plan against Heacock. I mean, look, anytime you can stop Heacock and or Rambo, you're doing a pretty darn good job. And it seems like Heacock's been the one handcuffed, you know, against Villanova. Against Notre Dame, it was Rambo that had less of a productive day. But I was really impressed. And I had a tweet ready to go had Maryland won that game saying Maryland won this game because of their ride. They started dominating faceoffs. They started to really dominate time of possession in the fourth quarter. And that's when they made their run. I mean, they scored 5 goals in the fourth quarter. I just thought Rambo was all over the place. I mean, not only carrying the ball, distributing the ball, but his ride was phenomenal in this game. And he finished the game with 4 goals. And he should have had a few assists. I mean, he set guys up in spots that either missed the cage or saves were made. So my biggest takeaway in this game was Matt Rambo And I don't want to take anything away from Villanova. I mean, the biggest takeaway is this the most improbable, unpredictable upset that you could have so far in the 2017 season.
We have a fan picks as part of our, you know, scoreboard.
But it was like 97%.
100%.
100%, yeah. I mean, that is – this is a game where I didn't think Villanova was going to win at all.
And then there's a computer prediction as well. Again, this is all accessible on the scoreboard on Inside Lacrosse, the Epic scoreboard page on InsideLacrosse.com. The computer prediction was 67% chance of Maryland winning, and the score was 20-10 was the predicted game outcome. So
yeah,
this was definitely
monumental.
Surprising.
Yeah, monumental. So that's the first thing, and then Rambo's performance is the second biggest takeaway. Now, if you break the game down in and of itself, Villanova stuck with their normal formula of playing two goaltenders. You know, you had Testa in the first half, Willis in the second half, and both of them combined, you know, they combined for seven saves. So it's not like goaltending was what kept Villanova in the game. I thought it was Villanova's offensive execution and Fracaro in particular. But then you get to overtime, you know, a situation where Maryland scored the last four goals in regulation, right? All the momentum going their way. They get possession in overtime. And it's Rambo that turns the ball over. I mean, I thought the game was over. I thought that game was done when Maryland tied it at 12-12. I'm like, there's no way Maryland's losing this game as it goes to overtime. And then you got Fracaro coming down and makes that pass to Seibel inside. How he handles it, first of all, is beyond me. And then he gets a great shot off and just whizzes it past Dan Morris, who had a good game for Maryland, 13 saves for Morris. But I was just, that's sports right there. All the momentum. Everything going Maryland's way. They've got the ball. They've got the personnel on the field. They got the guy handling it that's got them to this point. And then he's the one that makes, you know, a pass that goes out of bounds. I watching it on television, I looked like it was tipped, but clearly it wasn't. And then to go the other way and have Villanova score that fast. Like, Villanova didn't even have to really set up their offense or take any time. I mean, you know, wing dodge down and then the rollback and then the feed on the crease, goal, game over. I mean, it was like, wow. That just happened. Like, it was a great lacrosse. It was an entertaining lacrosse game, I should say. And Villanova winning it, not only winning it, but winning it the way that they want it in the situation and with all the momentum going Maryland's way. I mean, I think the Wildcats deserve a ton of credit.
The University of Maryland with a 2-game losing streak. You know, he's got a 2-game winning streak. University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Well, before we get to the Retrievers, who would have thought that Carolina and Maryland would be playing each other at this stage of the season? And both of them, you know, what, Carolina's lost, they lost to Hopkins.
I think they have three losses.
Do they have three now? Yeah. I'm not sure. But, they, I mean, they could have
lost to Richmond.
Richmond, Hopkins, and they lost to Hofstra. So this could be loss number four for the Tar Heels, and this could be loss number three for Maryland. Who would have thought at this stage of the season, before these two teams get to conference play, that one of them could have four losses and one of them could have three? It's crazy. And one of them does have three, obviously, but... But yeah, I'm sorry. I stepped all over your grand intro
there.
For,
no, that's all right.
For UMBC.
Yeah, the Retrievers win their third game of four games, opening America East play on a high note for first-year coach Ryan Moran and sophomore midfielder Billy Nolan, 5 goals for UMBC.
So anybody that knows the Tuesday takeaways, what I used to write, I always like to feature at least a game or two, a team or two off the beaten path every week, and I've feel like we need to get back to that.
Yeah,
get
no,
back
good.
To that model.
I love it.
And I picked UMBC because this is a team that started the season 0-3, losing by a combined 42-17 to Carolina, Hopkins, and Richmond.
That's not good, is it?
Not good.
But I mean, those are really good teams.
They are really good teams. All three were on the road. But you see those results and you watch those games and you're like, oh boy, Ryan Moran really has his work cut out for him in his first year. But if you know anything about Ryan Moran, he's a guy that loves to play up-tempo. He loves early offense, and that's what he said he was going to do with his UMBC team. He said, if we have transition opportunity, we are going to take it. They beat Mercer 15-4. They lose to Towson 8-6, a loss that prompted many people to drop Towson out of the top 20 because they lost to Loyola, and then they barely beat UMBC, and they're like, okay, well, let's get rid of Towson. They're not that good. And now we're finding out that Towson is a pretty good lacrosse team. And UMBC has reeled off 2 straight wins at Marist, at Stony Brook, on the road, 6-4 and 12-9. This is a team that has allowed single-digit goals in his last four games, right? And they're winning, you know, and they're winning in the America East, where the last couple of years it's been Albany-Stony Brook. Now, with the exception of last year's America East tournament, where Vermont and Hartford upset both, you know, the Danes and the Seawolves. But again, in 2017, it's supposed to be, you know, Albany and Stony Brook meeting for the conference championship. You got Binghamton playing really good lacrosse, tip of the cap to Kevin McCune and his team. And now you've got UMBC that's a real threat. And it's a very interesting game that they have coming up this weekend at Michigan,
yeah.
A Wolverine team that was idle last week, coming off of that huge win over Penn, their first win in program history over a top 10 opponent. Now you got a red hot UMBC team coming into Ann Arbor. So that game all of a sudden is really interesting. So hats off to UMBC, Ryan Moran. Max Alderman is having a real nice season. Max Maxwell is another player that can get some things done. I really like Jack Andrews, a crafty, nifty little quick attackman that they have. And you mentioned Nolan with five goals. He only has seven on the season, so five of them came in that game. And they're getting better face-off work with Jake Brothers, a freshman. And they're only winning 48%. But when you take into consideration, in the last couple of years, UMBC has been about 35% at the face-off dot. That's a rapid, drastic improvement for UMBC. And they're playing really good lacrosse right now.
Yeah, that was a really key win for them at Stony Brook to start off the America East season. Dix, staying in the town of Baltimore, moving across the Homewood Field, the Blue Jays are on a three-game skid. They lose in overtime to their rival, the Syracuse Orange, 8-7. Hopkins had a one-goal lead. Syracuse ties it up late in one of those games as a Hopkins fan where you just see that coming. You know that they're going to score, and they do. And then they win it in overtime. What's your takeaway?
The first thing is, so last year the game was played at Homewood Field, and then this year it was played at Homewood because it had to be moved from the Carrier Dome because of, at the time, the potential of Syracuse hosting an NCAA women's basketball tournament game. And pardon my ignorance, I don't know if Syracuse hosted or not. I know that they lost to UConn in the second round of the women's tournament. I don't know if the game was at Syracuse or not. But my biggest takeaway is, for the second year in a row, this game was kind of boring. It was boring last year, and I broadcast the game for ESPNU. It was played in horrific weather conditions. It was a cold, raw, rainy, miserable day, very sloppy, a lot of turnovers. And that game was won. It was an entertaining last couple of minutes when Drew Sapinski scored a game, you know, the game-winning goal in overtime. And then this year it was also, you know, more of a defensive battle, but it was, I don't know, it just didn't ring with, like, traditional Hopkins-Syracuse games. So I thought this game was a little bit boring, but, you know, no one really cares. You know, coaches don't care what broadcasters think of a pace of a game or the tempo of a game. I mean, it wasn't a necessarily sloppy game. 21 turnovers combined, you know, 11 for Syracuse, 10 for Hopkins. Faceoffs were 50-50. Hopkins is the only one that had one failed clear. So there was nothing, like, on the stat sheet, but it was just, I don't know, just watching the tape back of this game, it just, I don't know, it's just kind of yearned for the games of yesteryear with Syracuse Hopkins, you know, your 14-12s and 15-14s and that kind of thing. But I think you have to be really impressed with Syracuse, 5-1, a team that I really didn't think was very good, and a lot of other people kind of share that sentiment, but they just keep on winning and they keep producing. So
they've played 5 one-goal games and won 4 of them.
Yeah, which is impressive.
Really impressive.
And they're developing players. They're without their best defenseman, Nick Mellon. They graduated their best player from a year ago in Dylan Donahue. You know, Mariano is 2 goals, playing really well. Sergio Salcido only had 1 goal, but it was the game winner, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he scored one late in the second quarter.
But he had the assist. Yeah, he had the assist on the game winner from Bomberry.
Yeah, I misspoke before. Mariano is the one who tied it up, and Bomberry won it.
Right. Yeah, Mariano with that no-look shot. So resiliency is kind of the, you know, the Syracuse team. I mean, they were up. Hopkins was up 7-6, and then Joel Tinney scores a goal that was disallowed, which gave the ball back to Syracuse, and they were able to come down and score.
Yeah, what's the rule on that, on the Tinney? You said he left his feet, and
I have not talked to that officiating crew. So I don't know exactly what the call was, but watching it on tape, And again, I'm not commenting on the officiating. I just
want to know what the rule
I would
is
I would dive. Imagine that it would be that Tinney left his feet on his own and landed in the crease. Okay. In which case, it doesn't matter if the ball is in the goal or not before he hits the crease. The key term is grounded. You know, were his feet grounded? You know, before he entered the crease. And I saw you tweeting, and I got a couple of texts. I got phone calls from people saying, oh, my God, you got to take a look at this. And when I looked at it, I didn't think it was, you know, I was like, all right.
Yeah, I just thought if the ball was in the net before you go in the crease, I thought it was a goal. But you were saying that's not the rule. You can't leave your feet.
You can't leave your feet.
On
your own, yeah. And then people were saying, oh, he was pushed. And what I saw from the tape, pushed. There was no, push. No, so moving off, you know, I don't know what exactly the call was.
You don't usually
I just know it was a crease violation.
Why it looks so strange is that he slid.
Yeah.
Usually it's a guy stepping in the crease or diving in the crease. This was, he started 5 feet out of the crease and slid into it slowly as the ball was sort of trickling in.
So just to give you some sense of the dive rule. So let's say I catch a feed on the crease and I'm wide open on the crease and I'm right in front of the goalie. I throw a fake at the goalie and then I jump straight up in the air. I jump, shoot, and score. And then I land in the crease, if my feet touch the crease line, that is a dive. That is because I left my feet on my own and I landed in the crease. Like, that's how technical the rule is.
Gotcha.
So, again, I don't know what exactly the call was. I'm deducing from watching the tape that it was potential a dive and it was a crease violation. But regardless, you know, you have to give Syracuse credit. They come down, they tie the game, and then they win the game in overtime. It was nice to see Hunter Moreland back at the faceoff dot for Hopkins.
He was very good in the second half.
He was. He was very, very good. And I think it was Lax Film Room that was tweeting out that Ben Williams is going to chew him up because Moreland is not as athletic as Ben Williams. And I do not dispute that. Ben Williams is a player that if he was not a FOGO for Syracuse, he is talented enough. He probably could run on their second. You know, he could be an offensive midfielder. But to say that about Hunter Moreland, who's coming out into the game off of an injury with a big old knee brace, is just flat out ignorant. And I thought that was really uncalled for on the part of that tweet. I thought it was really a low blow.
Dix, you say the game wasn't up to the standards. I'm looking at Hopkins only took 31 shots.
Right.
And Syracuse only takes 32. There's games that we've seen this year where one team has taken 60 plus shots. And this is both teams taking 30. Goes to a question from one of our listeners at Adam Berto 7 asks, what is up with Hopkins?
I think it's all of a sudden the offense has kind of lost its way, you know, has kind of lost its mojo. And with all the, you know, so you look at last season, and most, if not all, of the initiation of the offense came from the attack because you had so many midfielders on the shelf. And now with the likes of Tinney and Reed and Sapinski and Concannon are back, you're seeing more initiation from up top, but you're just not seeing the results and the, you know, the quality and shot opportunities, I guess, for lack of a better term. So I don't know. The first couple of games when Hopkins started, 4-0. I mean, they started 4-0, and the offense was just humming, and everybody was scoring, and such depth, and it was really fun to watch. Now all of a sudden, they're just really struggling, you know, to get anything going offensively. I don't know what the answer is, but I do know I notice a difference in that, you know, Shaq Stanwyck initiated a lot last year, and he's not as initiating as much, or so it would seem, when watching the games on film. You know, I haven't. I watched the Princeton-Hopkins game on tape. The Towson game I watched on replay, and then you know, the Syracuse game I watched on replay as well. So it just seems like there's a shift in the initiation, which I don't have a problem with because you have so many good athletes at the midfield. It just seems like this group, for whatever reason, has lost their groove over the last few weeks. Coach Petromalis said before the Syracuse game that it was an issue of practice, that the kids weren't practicing hard enough or taking practice serious enough or something along those lines. And Dave Petromalis, you mean – the one thing that Coach Petromalis will always talk to is how important practice is to him and how important practice should be to the players. So maybe it's a situation where they just need to execute and practice better.
Yeah, some of the Hopkins, not haters isn't the word for it, but some of the old line of Petro's got too tight of a grasp on these guys. I'm starting to see on social media and hearing on, you know, talk about that. Is there anything to that? Is that he needs to let them open up and play a little bit more? I mean, in the Crease podcast, the Aburn and Devitt were talking about this, that, you know, it's too regimented. Let the guys play. The guys aren't relaxed. I don't necessarily see that. I agree with you that there's the midfield is initiating the offense more, and they're playing. There's film on what they're trying to do now, and they're playing some good teams as well. And it's a matter of
executing
and playing a little bit. And I get maybe the relaxing a bit, but I think it's just they're playing some good teams who are also preparing and working to win the game as well. And this game this week that's coming up with Virginia at Homewood Field this Saturday really is turning into a huge game for both teams.
The other thing, too, is like it could be a double-edged sword with you playing so many guys, and Hopkins plays a lot of guys, more than they were playing last year. Maybe guys aren't getting into a groove. You know, maybe they're not playing as much, you know, with splitting the minutes, so to speak. Maybe they're just not getting into a groove. I don't know. I honestly, you know, I haven't covered a Hopkins game from a broadcasting standpoint yet this year, so I really can't comment on, you know, do they look tight? Are they playing too tight? I mean, from what I'm watching, I mean, it doesn't appear that way. I think Bob Benson, the offensive coordinator for Hopkins, has built up a lot of collateral and a lot of trust with Dave Petromala, especially last year, the job that he did with all the personnel that was injured. So I really, you know, I don't. But, you know as well as I do, at Johns Hopkins, a three-game losing streak is kind of the same as Armageddon. Hopkins is not supposed to lose two in a row, let alone three in a row.
A lot of it could be face-offs. I'm looking, you know.
Well, the face-off has not been strong this year.
Well,
strong as they thought it was good. As last year, not as strong as last year.
I mean, Towson has a great face-off guy.
Who got destroyed by the Ohio State. Jake Withers, in a weekday game last week.
But the Big Cat was very good against Hopkins.
Big Cat was, not only.
Zach Currier was great against Hopkins.
Yep.
And the first half of this game, Hopkins scores two goals and doesn't have the ball a whole lot.
Yeah.
The second half, Hunter Moreland, I think he won about 8-12 or something. So they started winning and they score five goals. So having possession, winning.
That's important too. Yeah. You don't have the ball. You can't score, which is redundant. But, you know, it also doesn't allow you to get into a groove.
Yeah. Well, moving on to the team that Hopkins has to play this weekend, we talked about they also are coming off of an overtime loss at home to Notre Dame, an 11-10 win for the Golden Domers. What are your takeaways from this one?
I really like watching Virginia play.
They're fun, aren't they?
They're fun. They don't back down. They just kind of, they just kind of throw caution to the wind and go out and just get up and down the field, which is really fun to watch. In Notre Dame, I think we're seeing the emergence of the next great defenseman in Garrett Eppel. He actually struggled a little bit this week against Michael Krause. Krause was impressive. And you talk about Krause, you talk about Docs Aiken. You know, Virginia has two of the best freshmen in the country. And, they were fantastic. But Eppel, that game-winning assist to Garnsey and then the handle by Garnsey and the shot, the score was really impressive. But I think my biggest takeaway in this game was Sergio Perkovic. Perkovic is
it's perking up.
Oh my God. All right. Yeah, he is. Perky Perkovic is perking up. He's a guy that, has been like one or two for, a lot over the last couple of weeks. You know, for him to step up with three big goals, including the, I believe he got the game tying goal, which was under 5 minutes left to go in that game. I thought he was terrific in this game and doing what he should be doing, and that's leading this team and making big plays and scoring big goals. I thought that was terrific. I did watching Pierre Byrne, that is a nice second option, and it's okay to be second to Sergio Perkovic, but I thought that him getting underneath the defense, getting inside, he had a really nice assist in the game to Gleason, but also Thompson, the goaltender for Virginia, made an insane save against Byrne late in regulation where Pierre got underneath the defense and shot it off stick side. And I think it was like a chicken wing save. The elbow got up by Thompson to make the save. But just a really fun lacrosse game to watch. Terrific game. Impressed with Krause, but even more impressed with Perkovic and him stepping up in those key situations and making big plays for Notre Dame. Really, you know, showing why he is a first-team All-American.
One other key game this weekend, Dix, that we haven't talked about yet. Ohio State just dismantles Denver in the horseshoe, 16-7. Great win for the Buckeyes, who are now still undefeated, and Denver with two losses now.
I mean, Denver is they had a bad day, and Ohio State had everything to do with that. It's amazing the level of energy and the excitement. It's like Ohio State was foaming at the mouth. I mean, just picture Nick Myers with dog leashes and these guys on all fours just foaming at the mouth, waiting to get after Denver. Like, just put that image in your head, and that was Ohio State lacrosse this past Sunday.
You know what was interesting about that, and one of the things is they do their senior day now.
Right.
Not the last home game of the year, but the last non-conference home game.
Right.
And they played it in the horseshoe. I can imagine how they would be taking this as the most important game of the season for them, and they played like it.
Well, and it was a big week for Ohio State. They come to Maryland midweek last week, and their Tuesday game was moved off of Tuesday and played Wednesday at 12 noon on probably the coldest day in the winter that Baltimore has had so far. I mean, it was absolutely miserable, and they come away with they scratch out a 6-3 win, and then they get to go home, and they just jumped all over Denver. And, I mean, you take your pick at what was impressive about Ohio State. You know, with the freshman, Trey LeClair with 5 goals. You know, the defensive effort that was just fantastic, led by Ben Randall and Eric Evans. You know, they got good goaltending out of Tom Carey. Jake Withers was solid all day long at the faceoff dot. Trevor Baptiste is an animal. You know, I mean, he is a beast at the faceoff dot. And Withers and Baptiste were beating the daylights out of each other. A lot of 50-50 ground balls. A lot of guys picking it up and having to get away from pressure. I mean, at one point, Baptiste was flogging, you know, Withers, which led to it eventually led to a Denver penalty. But I don't think it was on Baptiste. But that was just a dominating performance. A dominating performance. If I'm Denver, you've got to find a dodger outside of Connor Cannizzaro. Now, look, this is an offense predicated on quick ball movement, misdirection and spinning it. You know, players don't keep it in their stick for more than 3 seconds at a time. But you still need a dodger that can break a defense down and draw slides. And I thought this was a game where the absence of Zach Miller was very pronounced for Denver. But again, you know, it's the season has been interesting. I mean, we saw Ohio State go from 17-4 in Sol Lacrosse Maverick poll. Now they play Notre Dame this weekend, right? So they lose to Notre Dame. All of a sudden, Ohio State's not going to be any good anymore. Yeah. You know, just like everybody don't think Denver is any good anymore because they got throttled by Ohio State, and just like nobody thinks Maryland's any good anymore because they lost to Villanova. You know, it's a we're so fickle in the lacrosse world that a team loses a game and all of a sudden you think they stink.
Here's the upcoming schedule for Ohio State. It's
get ready.
At Notre Dame, at Penn State, home against Hopkins, at Michigan, their arch rival, home against Maryland, and at Rutgers.
Well, you know,
that's a murderer's row right now.
But that's, you're looking at two top five, you know, at the end of the year, I do think, you know, top five, top eight teams in Denver and Notre Dame that you end your non-conference slate against, mm-hmm. right? And then you go into the Big Ten, and we're going to talk about the poll.
Yeah.
You've got what? You've got Rutgers, Penn State, Ohio State are all in the top five. You know, Maryland and Hopkins are now in the teens, or, you know, 11-ish in teens, and Michigan's ranked.
Yeah.
All six teams are ranked.
Hey, before we get to the poll and Dixie's top five, let's talk about Sideline Swap.
Let's do it.
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear, Dix. You can find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more, or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. I bet your boys would love some of the stuff they could get on Sideline Swap.
Absolutely.
Some cool helmets, some gloves, stuff you can't get really anywhere else. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. List in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit SidelineSwap.com today to get started. That's SidelineSwap.com. SWAP, sidelineswap.com. All right, Dix, let's get into this poll. Your Scarlet Knights.
The Big Ten. My Scarlet Knight. Big week for Rutgers. They beat Princeton last Wednesday, 16-11, something like that.
I think that's about right.
Yeah, right around there. And then had to kind of a humdrum game against New Jersey Institute of Technology that Friday. They won 10-6. But, I mean, Rutgers continues to roll, man. And they are the number one team in the Inside Lacrosse Maverick poll. I was a little surprised.
How about the Big Ten? So in our preseason face-off yearbooks, you know, that's the media picks it, but also the coaches sort of pick the conference rankings. So then Maryland first and then Hopkins second in the preseason Big Ten poll. Well, we have three teams from the Big Ten in our top five of the Maverick media poll this week, and the Blue Jays and the Terps are not those teams. Number five is Hofstra, who was the preseason face-off yearbook number 35 team. The Flying Dutchman, the Hofstra Pride, playing great lacrosse.
The team, the Pride formerly known as the Flying Dutchman.
Yeah, coming at number five. Ohio State is number four. They were 22nd in the preseason poll.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State, who was 16th in the preseason poll, is now third. Notre Dame is four. Was fourth in the preseason poll. They're coming at number two this week. And the number one, Rutgers Scarlet Knights, 19 in the preseason poll, and lost two of their key offensive players early. And expectations may have dropped off a little bit for them, and they've been playing great lacrosse. We had a question from another listener, at Dave Pounder, mm-hmm. on lacrosse, on Twitter, asked us, why do polls so early if there's such shakeup in it? And Terry Foy jumped in to clarify.
The intimidator.
Yeah.
The enforcer, T. Foy.
And Terry makes a good point. It's like, it's, you know, every other sport does it. It's for conversation. It's for expectations. It's for
coverage
it's
and exposure for the fans of and the exposure. Game. Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
So having all the polls.
Come on, Dave.
You got to have them. But I understand his point of, you know, well, in college football, what they always say is, teams sort of get slotted in a preseason
right.
poll, and they don't really move until they lose, or it's hard to jump somebody.
Right.
Lacrosse and, you know, other sports like basketball, baseball.
Are you kidding me, man? Lacrosse, the media, it's like you lose a game, you're like garbage, man. You're like, oh, hey, you were number two last that. Week. Hey, welcome to number 17.
Ohio State, if you lose to Notre Dame, you could be out of the top 20.
I'm telling you. Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, look. Back.
So we need these polls, but, man, it is we've come a long way from where at least the top five teams in our poll this week, what the preseason expectations were for these teams, and they're playing great lacrosse, and they're undefeated for the most part, and other teams aren't.
So when I was in, you know, back in my day, back when I was in college, I remember it was 1992, and I think our fourth game of the year was against Syracuse, and we beat Syracuse at Homewood Field. And then the first poll came out. So the first poll used to not come out until it was like mid or end of March. And we were ranked number one.
This is the USILA, right?
Yeah, this was the USILA. There was no Inside Lacrosse back then. There was no other media poll other than maybe the Baltimore
Thank
Sun.
Thank God for Inside Lacrosse.
Thank God for IL. And we were number one. And we were like feeling all good about ourselves and patting ourselves on the back. And then we went down to Virginia that next weekend and got mauled. So there used to be a time where the polls did not come out until, of course, back then it was, you know, only 3 weeks into the season being late March because games didn't start till the first weekend of March. So you'd have 3 weeks under your belt. And we were 4-0 and we were number one. And, you know, so the polls used to not come out that way. Now, the polls have come a long, long way. I'll use 2008 as an example. Or no, 2007. I'm sorry, 2007 I'll use an example. Lacrosse used to be, I guess Lacrosse Magazine always had a poll as well. And the laziest poll ever, they used to just rank whoever was defending national champion number one. So 06.
No matter what they lost.
Yes. So 06 was probably, I think over the last, so that was 06. Let's take it back to 2000. All right. So the last, where are we, 2017? Last sure. 17 years. The two most dominant national champions, in my opinion, 2012 Loyola, lost one game to Hopkins, end of the season, but then steamrolled their way through the NCAA tournament to win their program's first national championship. And then 2006, Virginia. Virginia in 2006 was a monster. Matt Ward, attackman of the year. Michael Culver, defenseman of the year. Kyle Dixon, midfielder of the year. Kip Turner, I don't know if he won the goaltender of the year, but he was either a first or second team All-American. So you've got four guys, and that doesn't include guys like Matt Poske. Ben Rubior was on that team.
Rotelli was on that team?
No, Rotelli graduated in 03 or 04. But that is a pretty loaded lacrosse team, right? They lose all those guys. And they get ranked number one in the preseason in 2007, which, by the way, Virginia did not make the NCAA tournament. So I think the polls are a lot more conscientious these days. You have a lot more – and Southern Cross does a great job. I think the – when I started voting in the poll 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I think there were maybe 10 of us. I think there's like upwards of 40 now, 40 voters.
I think there's 33. Think.
Okay. So round down. So 33. That's still a healthy number.
Maybe it's 37.
And then you round up to 40. Come on. What are you doing?
To find
here?
Out.
Come on. What's the matter with you? So the polls have become, and people, like I've said it before and I'll say it again, I don't put a ton of stock into these polls. I spend probably 10, 15 minutes on the poll Sunday evening after all the action's done.
Well, let me put, just to clarify, you spend a lot of time watching lacrosse and thinking about college lacrosse.
Yeah.
Sitting down to do the poll isn't, you know,
it is not a scientific exercise for me.
Correct, but you spend a lot of time preparing to do the poll.
I thought Tyler Steinhardt, the founder and organizer of Shootout for Soldiers, had a great tweet. He said something like death, and this is not the exact tweet, but it's like death taxes and members of the people who vote in Inside Lacrosse media poll tweeting about how hard it's going to be. And he had like four or five people lamenting putting their poll together. I thought that was really, really funny. And everybody that votes in the poll, you know, spends a lot of time.
36.
Okay, 36. So,
voted.
Okay, so I said 40. I'm not, you know, we round up. I mean, you know, look, you take 3 hours on the poll, you take 50 minutes, whatever. You're making conscientious choices as to who you're ranking where.
Right, but again,
and there's no wrong
science
to it.
I'm standing up for you. I'm trying to make you look good here. You spend 10 to 15 minutes actually slotting the teams, but you spend hours watching lacrosse and making decisions about where teams should be ranked.
Yeah, I do. Why am I going to get taken off the list because I do it so quickly? I mean, if you look at my polls, they're not much different.
A gut reaction might be the best way to do this.
Yeah, sometimes it is. It's because it is what it is.
So
you know?
Overall, there's been 7 weeks of the poll. So there's been a preseason poll and then 6 weeks of polls in the Maverick media poll. There's been five different number one teams.
Right.
So there has been a lot of volatility at the top of the polls. Who do you have this week, Mark Dixon, in your top five?
Top five, number five is Hofstra. Number four is, I'm forgetting. Who do I have at number four?
Ohio State, Penn State.
No. Oh, my God, I'm drawing
Syracuse.
A blank. Syracuse. Thank you. Syracuse. So I have, five Hofstra, four Syracuse, three Rutgers, two Notre Dame, one Penn State.
Okay.
So that's my top five.
Okay.
That's my top
five. So it's a little bit different than what...
Yeah.
So you don't have Ohio State in the top five?
I might
have them at six or so.
I have them at seven. Six or seven. Okay. It was six or seven. Yeah. 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 I mean, they were number 17 in my poll. And I mean, it was a good week to be Ohio State because you had Hopkins, Maryland, Virginia, Towson, which Ohio State beat. Those are four teams. North Carolina lost to Richmond. You know, those are five teams right there. Pardon me, that were ranked ahead of Ohio State. And they leapfrogged teams like Loyola, Duke. I mean, they leapfrogged Duke that was ranked ahead of them. So it was a great week for Ohio State.
Yeah, they went from 17 to 4.
Yeah, which I don't have a problem with. I mean, you know.
Rutgers, Penn State, Ohio State. Again, huge week for the Big Ten in the poll. They're combined 25-0, those three teams. But as we mentioned, they're all about to really hit the meat of their schedules. They get into the Big Ten schedule and start beating each other up.
Well, and it's become the
meat. They can't all go undefeated.
It's become the meat of their schedule because of how well the Big Ten has done.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. Dix, it's time for the Epic Isle Commit Academy Freshman of the Week. Did a poll this week on Twitter. Had two candidates surveyed. Again, this is for guys who are alums of our Committed Academy. It was between TD Ireland. Fogo from Victor, New York, plays for Albany. He's having a great season. He was in our Power 100 freshman. He's ranked 58. He's our sixth-rated faceoff guy. And Joey Manown, who's from Saundersville, Rhode Island, played his high school ball at LaSalle Academy in Deerfield. TD Ireland, in their win this week, he had one assist. He was 19 of 25 facing off and had 10 ground balls. Stellar week for freshmen. On the season, he's 62% face-offing as their primary guy for the Great Danes. Manown had two goals and two assists in their 12-7 win over Georgetown. Well, the people have spoken, Dix. TD Ireland, first-time winner of the IL Committed Academy Freshman of the Week. He gets 54% of the vote this week. Joey Manown, your favorite boy band.
Bye.
He gets 46%. Manown has won it twice. He's been the two-time winner. And he gets knocked off by TD Ireland, who's had a great season. Manown, he's got 14 goals and 6 assists on the season. He was a part of the number one recruiting class in the inside lacrosse rankings and our number 7 overall recruit. And he is living up to the billing that he earned in high school. We're talking about Chris Rotelli.
Mm-hmm.
Is Joey Manown challenging him as the best player ever from Rhode Island?
It could be. Who knows? He's got a long way to go. Yeah. Rotelli won the very first Wharton, right? Was it Rotelli that won the very first Wharton? Or no, was that
Shanahan?
Shanahan. Yeah, Rotelli did win it. He did win a TUI, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A TUI. That's what you call it?
The TUI. Well, you know, I say the Tuareton.
With
know,
great respect.
But it's also, you know, it's like the Academy Award is the Oscar. You know, the Tuareton is the TUI.
Okay, nice. Congratulations to TD Ireland on his epic IL Committed Academy Freshman of the Week honors.
Nice work.
Well, Dix, it's time for our give and go.
What do we have this week?
This week, I want to talk about one of my favorite subjects.
Really?
Old school hip hop rap music.
Wow, thank God. I thought it was going to be March Madness again. Good gravy.
Again, how this works is I give Dix a topic, I give him my three choices, and then I want to start some conversation and get his three choices.
Okay.
Favorite old school rap groups.
Okay.
So this is the music you grew up with. You can pick
anybody.
Maybe
not necessarily grew up with. I mean, more like when I think of old school hip hop, I think more college. Actually,
yeah, probably
high school, college-ish.
Yeah, I think
that's
what we're probably listening to.
But that's fair. Grew up with, yeah.
My three favorites.
Go ahead.
This is really tough. I've been thinking about this for a while.
Snow.
There's a lot of
Snow is number one.
I like MC
Informer.
Snow. Great tune. Great Canadian rapper.
Is he Canuck?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, from Toronto.
Couldn't rap left-handed? Just one-hand rap?
That's awesome. I'm going to go, again, a great debate in my, you know, thinking about this for a long time. I wanted to have this topic for a long time, but some other more topical things came up. I'm gonna go with LL Cool J. Number three.
I like
one
him.
Of the first. I mean,
I like LL Cool J.
Radio, I'm Bad. Like just the old, just those albums were just awesome.
Bikini Small, Heels Tall. She said she liked the ocean. I mean, that's like
back to Cali.
That's one of the greatest
Cali.
Lines.
Cali.
Yeah, that's a good tune, man.
Yeah.
LL Cool J.
Around the Way Girl.
He rocks.
Just, he was awesome.
Jinglin' Baby.
Whatever happened to him? You never hear of him anymore.
What are you talking about?
He's on.
Dude's like.
He hosts every award show.
Yeah, it's like every award show.
That he's got Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon's not hosting. It's LL Cool J.
He hosts some Fakakta lip sync show. If you ever seen that.
Yeah,
lip sync
battle or
lip sync wars or something.
I mean, he's an actor.
Yeah.
I'd like him to put out another music album. That would be nice if you could focus on what his core product is.
Yeah.
I love him. He's great. Another guy who I considered for this, who actually has turned into a great actor himself, is the Fresh Prince.
Oh,
and
no
DJ
way.
Jazzy Jeff.
No.
Yeah, they had a couple of really good albums.
Yeah, but they're weak.
They didn't make my list.
They're like bubblegum. They're like bubblegum compared to, you know, LL Cool J and the other artists that I'm sure you're about to mention.
I agree.
But yeah, you know, Parents Don't Understand and Nightmare on My Street. But you listen to it now and you're just kind of like, that's weak.
Summertime is still an awesome
That's a good song.
Song.
That's
that
a good song.
That song is legit.
That is a good. And I like that. It's like an old school sample. From back in the like Parliament days or something.
So they made my honorable mention list. Number two, the Beastie Boys.
Oh, I love the Beasties. Yeah, you were a big Beastie Boys guy.
Oh my God.
So for people that don't know, when Dan and I were at Hopkins together, Dan played football, I played lacrosse, but I was on work study. And I used to keep stats as one of my duties at basketball games. And Dan, it was DJ Dan Flynn.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
On the Wheels of Steel, especially for the what was it, a half-court shot? What was the contest at Hopkins?
It was a half-court shot.
Half-court, yeah.
Craig Brooks
would announce it. I did it for a couple of years after Brooksy had a family and couldn't do it. But, yeah, that was the Wheels of Steel.
Like, oh, my God. That was like the best job ever. Be like under the basket.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
And the team was really good, and all my buddies were on the team. They'd tell me what to play. It was great.
Yep.
The Beastie Boys. I absolutely love the Beastie Boys. Still listen to them all the
Fantastic.
Time.
Fantastic. Hey Ladies might be their best song.
Yeah, Paul's Boutique album is a work of art.
Yep.
License to Ill. License first to album. Ill.
Yeah.
It's just She's Crafty, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Just
Hold
amazing,
It Now, Hit It.
Amazing sampling on there. Led Zeppelin. It is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard to not put the Kings from Queens on this.
Mm-hmm.
Run DMC probably came fourth.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go with Public Enemy. It's my number one group. Absolutely
can't trust
love
it.
Chuck D.
I think Chuck D may have the best voice of an MC over the last 25 years.
So
authoritative.
Yes, that's the word I'm looking for.
I mean, when you Fight the Power, the beginning of Fight the Power is 1989, a number, another summer. Sound of the funky drummer.
So you know what our bumper music is, right?
What?
By the time I get to Arizona.
I don't like that song.
But that's our intro music.
Well,
on
that's
our
it.
Podcast.
And the funniest thing about Public Enemy is, so you think of like the movie Do the Right Thing with Spike Lee.
Unbelievable movie.
Look, man, I'm a suburban white boy. Listen to this stuff
from Cainesville.
And basically, Flavor Flav would like to skewer me. And I'm just nodding my head to the music.
Professor Griff, probably.
They had the whole army and the whole military
S1Ws.
Thing. S1Ws.
I've seen them in concert several times.
Well, which is so... Oh, I'd love to see you do it. Well, a sunburnt white guy.
I've seen the Beastie Boys.
Well, Beasties, you'd fit in.
I've seen... they had a show I went to in college one year. So
Mistletoe Meltdown or something like
they
that?
They played at the Baltimore Arena.
Now the Rofo
the
Arena.
Chicken Box.
Yeah.
It was Public Enemy, Heavy D and the Boys.
Oh, my God.
The Ghetto Boys.
Oh,
my God. MC Light.
Oh, I love MC Light.
And there was one other act that was...
Gotta Get a Roughneck.
Yeah, it was an amazing show. Amazing show.
Yeah.
Public Enemy, they're just amazing.
And you made it out of there alive? I mean, you didn't get...
So, this is a true story. Went to see Public Enemy one time at the old Spectrum with my buddies from high school, in high school. Probably mm-hmm. This was probably 1988, 1989. And we're leaving, and there was some gunplay in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Had to hit the deck as a drive-by and some
knucklehead.
Uzi fire probably into the air, hopefully. No one was injured that I know of, but it was a scary moment.
Well, that was back in the time of like Def Comedy. Remember the old In Living Color skit where Def Comedy Jam? Like they throw a mannequin up on the stage and it's like, you know, like with a knife sticking out of it and stuff like that. I mean, it was crazy times, but a great time for music, old school hip hop.
All right, so let's talk.
So let's,
your top
well, let's review. So,
my
so
three,
your top
I'm
three.
I'm going to say LL Cool J, Beastie Boys, Public Enemy.
Okay. All right. I like all three of those bands. Yeah, they're fantastic. Not? Okay. So before I begin, I actually got into a Twitter tit for tat with Jerry Byrne, the assistant coach of Notre Dame, with old school. Cause he said that our music, should be, Gangstar.
I love Gangstar.
Yeah.
Guru.
Dwick. That's all Dwick. I mean, that's, you know. But he said our outro music should be Gangstar. And I'm like, oh, I'm thinking more like Lords of the Underground. And it just went like tit for tat for like a day or two until he waved the white flag. But we won't go there. We had a lot of fun with that. I know Coach Byrne appreciates hip hop music. Okay, so top three for me. So I guess when I was in seventh grade, I bought on vinyl the Fat Boys. I loved the Fat Boys.
You're giving me a hard time for Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince?
Let me finish. They fit in the category of DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince, no doubt. So I have my bubblegum, you know, rap or hip-hop just like you do. All right, so let me think about this for a second because I love old-school hip-hop.
I'm going to throw out two other honorable mentions.
Whoa, 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 wait a second.
You can name the same
but
ones.
But no. Let me go first.
All right,
and then
I'll
if
see
I
you
don't,
get a good poll.
If I don't hit them, all right? So I guess number three would be Ice Cube. I love I love Ice Cube.
No, really, not really N.W.A.
Well, I love the beats and the music of N.W.A. I just don't like the message. You know, I think the message that they, you know, sure. I'm not really, you know, I appreciate police officers and the law and all that kind of thing. But man, those
some of the songs were
those songs are wicked. Yeah, you know, which is coincidentally the name of one of his
"Express Yourself" was the one positive message, right, sort of upbeat song.
Right, right. But no, Ice Cube. I mean, you know, we're talking "Steady Mobbin'" and "Wicked." The song "Wicked" is fantastic.
I went down to the basketball court, messed around, and got a triple.
Now,
double.
See, that's not because that song is so popular. Like, I'm weird that way. Like, when something gets really, really popular, I'm not as into it. So today was a good day. It's an okay song,
okay.
But I mean, these songs too are graphic, man. I mean, they're graphic. Speaking all the of graphic,
I think Eazy-E mm-hmm. is one of the greatest rappers of all time.
Oh, he's fantastic.
I would put Eazy-E and Eminem mm-hmm. in like my Mount Rushmore of MC.
So are those your two honorable mentions that you?
No.
So you have more.
Good yeah, grief. I like those guys, but I would. Talking old school. I put Boogie Down Productions.
I don't like Boogie Down Productions.
Eric B. and Rakim.
Oh, dude, I was gonna say Eric B. and Rakim.
You can say them still. You asked me who my other
because I'm paid in full. Yeah. I ain't no joke. All right, so you be quiet because you're stealing all my thunder.
Okay.
All right, so my honorable mentions. Then I should have gone honorable mention first. I'll go honorable mention Eric B. and Rakim. I love those guys.
Yeah, okay.
And then
Eric B was a big dude.
Oh, huge! And then just the smooth delivery of Rakim is just, you know, awesome. I love Pete Rock and CL Smooth. I love those guys.
Okay.
Love them. I mean, hence they were in EPMD. Correct? Was Pete Rock and CL Smooth in EPMD?
I don't have a memory of that.
I love EPMD, and that's another honorable mention for
EPMD.
Me. Love EMP, Crossover, Strictly Business. I mean, they are fantastic. But so number two for me would be Big Daddy Kane.
I just wrote him down.
Big Daddy Kane.
Big Daddy Kane.
One of the, I mean, just.
That's what I call our head of graphic design here at Inside Lacrosse.
Matt Kane.
I always call him Big Daddy
Big
Kane.
Big Daddy Kane, yeah. BDK. I mean, guy's a stud. You know, smooth operator and ain't no half stepping and all that stuff. I mean, he's fantastic. So I love Big Daddy Kane. I became familiar with Big Daddy Kane in high school. I went to go see the movie Colors with Sean Penn and Robert Duvall. Fantastic movie.
Great movie.
But Raw was on the soundtrack, and I played that soundtrack to death. So Big Daddy Kane. Don't even write down Ice-T.
I'm just talking about Colors.
Colors and then New Jack City is Ice-T. But number one for me, is Tribe Called Quest. Love Tribe Called Quest. And Low End Theory was the first CD that I picked up. Back in the day, and man, I still have it, and I just play it, you know, a lot.
My favorites were
a lot.
I love Left My Wallet and El Segundo and Bonita Applebaum.
Those are two great songs. Yeah. Great songs. I love Electric Relaxation. That is just that beat and just the lyrics. Can I Kick It?
Oh, such a great song.
It's just the best.
It's so smooth.
It's just the best. And then, microphone check 1 2. What is this? Bugging Out is a tremendous song. And then obviously the all time great for them will always, in my opinion, be Check the Rhyme. Like I think Check the Rhyme is the one that, you know. The other thing too is so back in college, living downtown, much like you did. Did you ever watch the Video Jukebox Network?
Yes,
and it was just all rap and hip hop. Rap and hip hop. And I'll never forget, we were at a buddy's house, and I don't know if you remember Willie D from Ghetto Boys.
Yeah.
The Cleanup Man. That song, Cleanup Man. So we are like at a buddy's house and we're having a good time. And but none of us wanted to use his phone to spend the money, like, because you had to So we called a buddy at who was at another friend's house, and we're like, "Dude, pick up their phone and like, we want cleanup, man." And he must have requested cleanup, man, like 6 or 7 straight times. He kept playing on the video chip network, so we're like, "This really works." So, so anyway, well, my top three: Ice Cube, Big Daddy Kane, and Tribe Called Quest.
That's a good list, man.
Yeah,
what, you know, a couple other honorable mentions: Naughty by Nature,
great,
yeah,
great. House of Pain, you're a big House of Pain guy.
I did like House
of Pain. House of Pain. I see you over there.
Yeah, they're so good. Oh, my God. It's bring back a lot of memories, man.
Oh, I never forget. I guess it was the summer of 92 we got back, or the summer of when we got back to school, and Jump Around was the song. I mean, Jump Around was everywhere.
Yeah.
You couldn't go anywhere without hearing Jump Around.
Good times, man. Music meant a lot.
Yeah.
It still does.
Still does, but the stuff,
sometimes
I mean,
I put on some of the stuff just to listen.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, some of the stuff is terrible.
I mean, not, I'm just talking about listening to the old school stuff.
But the new stuff, it's just like, but I mean, you know what? I guess, I don't know.
So
I mean, everything was different. Like, no one was the same, I felt. No one, or at least bands of stature were now it's like there's like one hook and one beat that goes around.
A lot of auto-tune.
A lot of electronic stuff. And I guess it's like what, like, I don't know, who's big now? Like Tyga?
Drake. Chance the Rapper.
I don't even know who Chance the Rapper sings. Lamar Kendrick, right? He's big, right?
I asked my nephew, who is a sophomore in high school. He's a good goalie, great kid. I said, who's your favorite music artist of all time? Hoping that, like,
Kanye West.
I asked his older brother this, and he's like, oh, man, I like, you know, The Who, Van Halen.
Oh, wow.
You know,
no kidding.
Zeppelin, you know, The Beatles. He gives a nice, thoughtful answer that I kind of would expect. Mike G says, Chance the Rapper.
Mm-hmm.
I had to look up who he was.
Well, my kids have those like portable speakers and stuff like that. And, you know, if anywhere they're playing it in the house, you just hear that. You know, it's just like this one beat.
Our parents probably said the same thing.
That's the thing. Our parents, you know, when I'm listening to, Can You Feel It in Human Beatbox? You know, my parents are probably like, what is going on?
Dougie Fresh.
I love Dougie Fresh.
And the Get Fresh crew.
Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick.
Yeah, Slick Rick. I love Slick Rick, too. He's probably on my honorable mention.
It's all Slick Rick because Gorilla. Of you.
Lottie Dottie. Snoop Dogg.
Snoop.
Dr. Dre. Oh,
Snoop
God.
And Dre. Yeah, sure. Wow.
Big Papa.
Oh, my God. I just had, I guess, the anniversary of... I do have a Tupac CD. He's somebody I came to not like, though, just because, I don't know, he's a little violent. And that's saying a lot, you know, Ice Cube, but...
You know what one of my wife's go-to karaoke songs is?
Hold on. Humpty Dance.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a lot of people's go-to, Humpty Dance.
She knows all the words. Yeah. Doesn't even look at the screen.
It's mine nice. Used to... I just shouldn't say used to. Mine's Bust a Move. Young MC. I could do so Bust good. A Move in my sleep.
It's so good.
Your best friend Harry has a brother Larry. But Biggie's death, the anniversary of his death was last week or 2 weeks ago, I think. And Backspin on Sirius XM Channel 43 had a tribute. And I forgot how much I love that song, Unbelievable, and the beat to that song, Unbelievable. Yeah, Biggie. And I didn't. And again, you don't realize that he was 24 years old when he died. So, wow.
Dix, my little boy is 14 months old, almost 15 months old, and he's a big dude. And he's still like 99 percentile for height. He's a big kid. And his name's Bennett, so we call him the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And I often call him my little beastie boy. So I'm trying to, whenever I have my daughter in the car, just the two of us, she's 3 and a half,
mm-hmm.
I'll drive around and say, you want to hear some Beastie Boys? So she's requesting it now. I asked her, you know,
wow.
I got some... Thought I was be playing some Disney song. I said, Hannah, what do you want to listen to? She said, how about some Beastie Boys?
Wow.
It's like, okay.
Hold it now.
Yeah, so we listen to License to Ill, Hey Ladies,
nice.
Shake Your Rump,
yeah.
Those songs. And just, it's the cleanest songs.
I know, you got to be really
careful. But she doesn't know what, she's 3 and a half. She doesn't know,
I know.
She's crafty. Is.
I know, still. Yeah. But you got to be, I'm talking about just the language. You know,
yes.
The language.
Yeah,
those
songs are pretty,
yeah.
They're not that bad.
No.
But it's just, I'm trying to pass on this.
Love of hip hop.
This knowledge and appreciation for fine music.
She's going to be a fly girl. You know?
She will be. She'll be Hannah Fly.
A fly girl. Yeah.
All right, Dix. That was awesome.
That's it.
I really enjoyed it. No, we got to get to our what to watch.
Oh, yeah. Big week. I've got a busy weekend.
Are you doing some games?
Yeah. So Yale at Princeton, Friday, 2 o'clock, ESPNU, myself and Chris Cotter will be bringing you that game. Can't wait. Yale, both of those guys won their Ivy openers. Yale handled Cornell pretty handily, and then Princeton really laid it to Penn. So this is a big key game. And then I'll change hats, and I've got the Denver Towson game on Saturday for LAX Sports Network is doing that game. I had some time free on Saturday and was invited to do that game. So you're looking at two teams coming off of losses to Ohio State.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but did I hear you doing the Hopkins Maryland women's game?
Yeah, I did the Maryland Hopkins women's game this past weekend for Big Ten Network. Yep. Yeah. Yep. You got it.
So those are two of my six games to watch that I had listed here. Number 10 Maryland plays number 14 North Carolina.
Replay of the national championship game, and again, you know, Carolina trying to avoid their fourth loss, Maryland trying to avoid number 3.
I had number 15 Virginia and number 17 Hopkins. Supposed to be a nice warm day.
Yeah, supposed to be 70 degrees on Saturday. Should be beautiful at Homewood Field.
Might try to get the family out to Homewood Field.
I mean, you're talking about a Hopkins team trying to halt a 3-game skid, and then Virginia obviously coming off of that loss to Notre Dame. That should be a really, you know, that has a potential to be a very entertaining game.
Yeah, I think so. Number 11 Duke at number 6 Syracuse.
Yeah, Duke is. Pulled it together, you know. Win over Richmond has got them on a little bit of a win streak.
7-2 now. Yeah, they're rolling.
I mean, I think I've got them in my top 10. They're either 6 or 7.
And number 11.
Well, number 11 at the inside look, but you're talking about my poll. Yeah, I keep bumping them up every week, and that's a big test for the Blue Devils. I mean, playing against a very very a team that's they're squeaking them out, but they're winning. Syracuse is winning.
That's all that matters is the W. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the last game I think is pretty interesting. I'm sure we'll be talking about this one. Is number 4 Ohio State at number 2 Notre Dame?
Yeah, I think Nick Myers made a comment post game that they haven't beaten Notre Dame since the early 2000s. Mm. So this is a huge game for the Buckeyes. And then Notre Dame obviously riding high after beating Virginia. So that's going to be a really really good lacrosse game.
Is this for the Great Western Lacrosse League Championship?
We're talking old school hip hop. This is the old school GWLL championship up for grabs. Yeah.
All right, hey, guys. If you like what you hear, subscribe to the podcast. It's that little on iTunes. When you type in Inside Lacrosse Podcast, hit the subscribe button. Helps download those right to your phone, so you never have to know. Go find them somewhere. And share it with a friend. Tell a friend, send them a Twitter link to it, or just text them the button. Hit that little square with the arrow, and it'll send the podcast to you. You can text the link to a friend. And don't forget to check out Mondays in the Crease podcast and Fridays Weekend Preview podcast. That's all the Division I lineup here at Inside Lacrosse. Dixie, been fun. Love
As
talking hip hop and lacrosse with you. Have a great week, and good luck in your games.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.